Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Fun Belt Podcast.
Fun Belt Podcast.
Fun Belt Podcast.
Fun Belt Podcasts.
It's just a great conference that is at a point right now where they're, I think, clearly the best group of five conference in the country.
The state of Sun Belt football is the strongest in our history.
And we got to continue to showcase what our league is about.
This league is insane.
Yeah, it might be like one of those eighth wonders of the world.
And you can see just what a great group of five conference it really is.
It's a big deal.
Boy, life is looking pretty good in the Sun Belt these days.
Very excited about the Sun Belt.
We started the Sun Belt back in 76, and I'm very proud of what has transpired through the years.
You know, while other conferences have been breaking up, our conference has become stronger.
Edit that out, Dusty.
It's time for another Sun Belt Fun Belt Podcast. It's great to be back with the boys after a couple weeks off and spending a whole lot of money in Orlando, Florida. Dusty Thibodeau of the Warhawk Report and Jeremy Harper, Ben Moore, of course, of Panther.com, Jeremy Harper of HowlRazor.com. I apologize, Jeremy. Don't want to.
It's all right.
Plug in there. But yeah, man, glad to be back with you guys. Happy New Year. I think you can still say that, right? Because it's the first time that I've seen you in 2022, but it is a basketball centric start today, and we're going to talk a lot of hoops, which I love. And then we have a very special, actually multiple very special guests, which is awesome. So I'm excited to come back with a bang, man. What's up, boys? How we doing?
Sitting on the bottom of the standings in both the men's and women's basketball.
That's how I feel. Oh man, that's too bad. You know, not all of us are sitting at the bottom of the standings. Some of us are actually doing fairly well.
Well, that's just because you alphabetize the teams.
No, I think it might be having something to do with the excellence of playing super good basketball, coupled with the sheer brilliance of a well-educated fan base. I don't want to give away too much about who's leading the Sun Belt in basketball, but it is Arkansas State. And we're pretty excited about that here. And I promise I won't be too pompous about it. Let's just talk about basketball today and just have kind of an even keel sort of discussion without any like hoopla or hyperbole or you know, just big, massive predictions for Arkansas State. Let's just, you and I, we all be friends and just go ahead and talk about Sun Belt basketball as if we were all equal.
He's drinking out of his golden chalice, pinky out.
it's amazing to see him not gloat, but gloat at the same time. That was great. But no, it was like the reverse psychology. Friends, you don't have video, and he's winking a plenty. I'm not going to talk about Arkansas State and how awesome they are. I'm not going to say that. And what a great start they are. And they're sparkling 9-1 home record and 4-1 in the league.
Yeah. It's not for me to brag about the Rebels. It's just for me to report the state of the Sun Belt, whether it's Georgia State winless in Sun Belt play or ULM coming off some devastating losses to the Alabama team. It doesn't really matter to me. What matters to me is Sun Belt excellence, not necessarily that the Red Wolves are 13-4, but that everybody's doing well. You know, anybody can win the Sun Belt, even Georgia State.
No, they can't. I'm sorry, Ben. It's not going to happen. They will struggle to fill their 80% and will limp into Pensacola as the 18th seed out of a 12-team league.
What is happening to Georgia State? Maybe you can give us some idea. We know a little bit what's going on with ULM, but we need to know right now what's going on with the Panthers.
This team can't score. And that's the biggest thing that I've really seen, with so much expectations coming back, with so many key players back, essentially the same team, back from, 2020, 2021, adding an all Sun Belt, level performer and Nelson Phillips off the bench. The team has just, really, they're 3-9 against Division I teams, which is staggering. I think against those same Division I teams, they're averaging 63 points a game. And the game of college basketball, if you can't put the ball in the basket, you're not scoring 65, 70 points a game. You really don't have a shot. Defensively, this team has improved. It's not necessarily showing in the standings, but offensively, they're a grease fire. You have four seniors on this team who are not playing well at home, which that's been the thing that has been staggering. When folks come to Atlanta, especially in the sports arena, they were seeing losses overwhelmingly. This team is not good at home. They're even worse on the road. And I have prepared people, started really about 2 weeks ago, saying, this may be the worst Georgia State team in more than a decade, because the guys are not playing well. Obviously, they had their COVID pause around the first of the year and lost a heartbreaker overtime game to Georgia Tech, where they missed 16 straight shots in regulation and OT. And that was really been, the issue the last, Thursday, Saturday games, there this past weekend against Coastal and App State. Both of them were close. Both of them had opportunities to win. And it was just the late game mistakes by your senior guards, pulling the ball away, dribbling it out of bounds off your own foot, things that you would not expect from this team and this program, which has obviously had really, really high expectations. And this is year three for Coach Lanier as well. So there's a lot of folks and a lot of chatter within the fan base that are not real happy in Atlanta right now, especially going into a new arena next season.
Yeah. Did we finally see a healthy South Alabama team this weekend as they swept the Louisiana schools?
Yeah. They've been missing some guys, and we kind of were shocked that it was Georgia State and South Alabama, and at the time Texas State too. All three programs were struggling early in conference play. What puzzled many of us the most on that was South Alabama, because they looked so good and out of conference. And I think they had some COVID problems. Is that right, Tibbs?
Yeah,
they've had COVID problems. I think Ben can attest to this. When your team has COVID problems, once the team is back on the bench and ready to play, they're still not healthy. They're still getting over COVID. They're still getting over missing that time on the practice floor and then missing that time in game time situations. So it seemed to me like South Alabama just had to sort of get over that. But they certainly got over it pretty well against Louisiana schools. Were you able to take a look at some of that, Tibbs?
Unfortunately, yes. I did watch it. South Alabama game was a tale of two halves. ULM really dominated the first half, second half. Yes. Richie Riley made the adjustments going to the 2-3 zone, and ULM made no adjustments and just were unable to really ball in the basket. And if you don't score, you don't win.
Now, is ULM still suffering from its own sort of health issues too? Are you still a little shorthanded?
No, they're fairly healthy. I think it's kind of like what you said, though, even on the tail end, once you are deemed cleared, you're not necessarily healthy or in shape and ready to go. So I think that's kind of what we saw for the ULM side. I think, though, that they have just a rough go this year. I mean, they're fighting to try to get in the middle of the pack because I think that's where you want to be for down the stretch when the seeding comes out for Pensacola. But for right now, they are definitely on the struggle bus. Maybe not as bad as Georgia Southern, Georgia State, but they're definitely sliding.
So just of note, I don't know how much this is worth. Ben, you may have a clearer, broader understanding of it than I do. But South Alabama has claimed the net lead in the Sun Belt, which doesn't mean a whole lot because we're still everybody's still above 100. But they did take over for Texas State, who played a really good game against Arkansas State. But what really surprised me this last three games has sort of been the exposure of UTA, how they have just sort of gone from sort of a dominating surprise team in the Sun Belt to, even with David Azori back, ULM beat them without David Azor. David Azor came back for Little Rock and for Arkansas State and was still not enough to beat any of the Arkansas teams. Was UATA a flash in the pan or was it just a tough road trip?
They caught some guys, you know, they were coming off the COVID pause, you know, as you guys kind of mentioned before. And you know, a key indicator and a key note, you know, the Sun Belt did shift their, you know, fully vaccinated, you know, policy recently. So just to kind of give you guys a heads up, especially in basketball, as we know, we're in the Thursday, Saturday for men's hoops specifically. If you basically test positive or have an exposure opportunity, you're 5 days out and essentially you're away from all basketball activities. You're sitting in your dorm essentially. So there's no practice, there's no games. And the tough part about it, especially talking to coaches and even talking to players, you know, it's such a rhythm game, right? You want to get into the gym every day. You want to get in and play games every couple of days. And I think that's the difficult part about it is UTA had an opportunity, especially on the front end. I think they caught South Alabama specifically a little short. Yeah. On the front, and then you know they you know then have kind of backslid a little bit. And to our point overall, I mean, we don't know who's great, we don't know who's good. I think it'll kind of play out. I'm very interested. You know, this week is the rivalry turn for South Alabama. They go and they play host Troy, and then they go back to Troy on the weekend. That's two enormous games for the Jags because if you drop both of them, you're falling way down. Then again, conversely, if you're able to knock off your rival and kind of put your distance there, they could be sitting at the top, close to the top of the league. So very interested in that game. And really the next week and a half to 2 weeks are going to be really, really fun to watch across the league.
My next question, and it goes to Tibbs too, because he got to see him firsthand. Is Troy for real? I watched them a little bit last night against Louisiana. They look like a very fast, aggressive team. They ended up dropping one to the Cajuns. But what do you think of them, Tibbs? Are they a for real contender in the Sun Belt this year?
I have not seen Troy in person, but I do like the Trojans. I think they're playing a little over their heads. I think that they are not where they expected to be this year. And by that, I mean, they're actually ahead of where the expectations were. But I think you're getting a glimpse of what the future of Troy basketball looks like under Scott Cross. I think that they are going to be one of the hotter teams of the league.
I think we all agree. Scott Cross elevates a team, no matter who's on his roster. And when we interviewed Scott Cross earlier in the year, you know, he was pretty humble about the team. But dang, that team looks pretty damn good. Have you got to see him, Ben?
Just catching box scores and some highlights. I haven't seen them live yet as well. They do play very good defense. You know, I think it was surprising with Scott Cross when he got shown the door with UTA a couple of years ago. And the fact that he was, you know, hired back within the league, you knew he was going to be solid. You knew Troy was going to have a good track to run on just because of how solid a coach he was, how he built it there in Arlington. His teams are well coached. You know, they execute. You know, they go out there. They're not going to be overly flashy. I don't believe they're even at the top of the league in scoring. But one of the best defensive teams in the league, and defense will travel, as we know. So I think they've been very impressive so far. I'm interested to see once they kind of make the turn and take that, top of the league look, going and playing in Arkansas State at Coastal. That's a big turn for them to see, as well as what I just talked about with the South Alabama. If you can split with South Alabama, I think they probably should feel pretty good about that.
I still think the surprise team so far, the Mountaineers, sitting at 6-2, second place.
You know what? Here's the thing about that, Dusty, is that they're the defending champions, right? You know,
we even have said they are nothing to be worried about. Yeah. Don't worry about them. That was a fluke last year. They're good. They're flying under the radar with the Georgia sweep this past weekend.
I'll give that to you. I never even gave Appalachian State much thought going into the preseason. And I often refer to them as the Sun Belt tournament champion, not necessarily the Sun Belt champion, because I really felt like that honor belonged to some other programs. But this team doesn't seem to
what you think.
I don't know what to think about them. I haven't seen them in action. All I know is that they keep racking up these wins. In fact, I feel like they have more wins than anybody right now. It's 6-2. It seems like they played a complete schedule. And every time I feel like they're about to come up to a team that's going to give them trouble, they don't seem to have trouble with that team. So Arkansas State goes and visits them this week. That should be a fun, exciting matchup. But damn, I'm worried about these guys because I don't know anything about
them. On the women's side, we always said that it was the Troy Trojans league to lose. And so far they've lost it. They've dropped two straight as they fell to Little Rock. Crazy. And now Little Rock and App State are sitting atop the women's standings.
Sun Belt entropy. You never know. You never know what's going to happen.
I think the biggest stat to take away from the women's side, though, it's really a top versus the bottom. Troy sits in fourth place right now, or a tie for third. They are plus 11 on the scoring margin. ULM, that is winless, negative 19.
Yeah, that seems to give you some implication as to who's doing well and who's doing poorly in the Sun Belt for the ladies. That's absolutely true. Where's Georgia State in that?
Right, they're down the bottom, along with the Warhawks from Monroe.
What is happening to the Warhawks and the Panthers? They can't get it done on the men's side or the women's side.
And you would think, or you would say, all right, this is just a bad year for the Warhawks. They've only won one conference game in each of the past four seasons. We always talk about the legend of the Chief on the Bayou from when they were the Indians, Chief Brave Spirit. I think the Chief's a little pissed and has just brought his vengeance out on basketball of the Warhawks. I think football, they were okay at four wins, way better than what we expected. But right now, the men and women, I mean, he is pissed and all over FAMU Coliseum and unleashing the wrath.
Yeah, and I don't think the ULM, at least on the men's side, I don't feel like they're playing bad basketball. I feel like they just, especially against South Alabama, man, I thought that was going to be a nice little upset there. But as far as the women are going, it seems like you're right that it is a little half heavy. But doesn't it always seem that way with women's basketball in the Sun Belt? It always feels like there's only one or two really good teams. And sometimes it's the Cajuns, and sometimes it's Troy. Arkansas State had a little run there, but never really got it together. It doesn't feel like we've ever really had just massively good women's basketball in the Sun Belt. Am I wrong about this? Tell me I'm wrong.
You're wrong.
Oh, yes.
I was just doing what I was told.
Then you're supposed to do some proof points about why I'm wrong. That's how that works.
The women's sports overall, I mean, I feel like in soccer, in softball, women's basketball, it's kind of the same players, different game, year after year after year.
We don't hear it as much, obviously, with the transfer portal as we focus on football and men's basketball, but it exists in the women's game as well. You have folks that, you know, transfer constantly if they are good. And I know Georgia State lost one of their power fours to Oregon, for example. So she's out and going to play in Pac-12, basically, for her super senior season. You know, it, would that make a significant difference? Yeah. I mean, she was a double-double machine for the Panthers, basically, and Taylor Huzendove. So she's out playing in Pac-12 land out there in Phil Knight country. So that does make a difference. Obviously, you got to bring good players in. You got to keep them happy, and you got to kind of string things together with these classes. But, you know, we have seen it. It's been very top heavy, as I think certainly the last four, five, 6 years that I can remember. Only a handful of teams have really dominated, you know, in the regular season and in the tournament.
So let me ask you this. At Arkansas State, we have our feelings towards women's basketball. We want the team to win, but we also, you know, want to be entertained by the team and so forth. What is the views of women's basketball at ULM and Georgia State? Is it always a work in progress, or is it like, no, we need a, this needs to be championship teams? What are the thoughts around campus for those teams?
Depends on who you ask. The old guard were around when ULM had their Final Four runs, had the All-American EJ Lee. There's the expectation to be competitive and to win. The new guard, I don't think really care too much about women's basketball because they've only known them being as the bottom dweller of the league.
Yeah, I think the toughest part, ultimately, Georgia State, you know, what's wild, 15, 18 years ago was a very good team. They went to four straight NCAA tournaments, usually grabbing a 16 or a 15 seed. But as of late, especially in the Sun Belt, they haven't been competitive. They haven't been, they've either not made the tournament when the, you know, tournament split down. If they did make the tournament, it was a short stay. You've had coaching transition. You know, the recruiting has been one where it kind of really hasn't inspired a lot. We know the state of Georgia is extremely strong for men's and women's basketball. But ultimately these kids want to go somewhere where they're going to play and where they're going to win. And that's not something that we've seen at GSU in quite a while. And something that's, you know, the coaching staff's going to have to do, but there's, you know, attendance wise, it's pretty low. Interest is pretty low. We don't see a whole lot of folks going to games. You know, specifically other than rivalry games, Georgia State did beat their rival Georgia Southern yesterday on a game winning shot. So that was certainly exciting. And, a great Saturday afternoon, you know, at the sports arena, but it just, you need more of that to build and you got to grow that way in order to gain sustained interest.
Yeah. For Arkansas State women's basketball, especially in the mid teens, like the mid 2010s, 2014, 15, 16, that time, they had good teams. They didn't make them all the way, but they were always very competitive. And it was almost like a healing balm for fans at Arkansas State because the men's team wouldn't be good. And you'd say, at least we've got the women's team. At least we've got a winner here to watch. So it's always hard when it's been hard for the last few years for Arkansas State because the women's team hasn't been that good. Now we've got a new interim coach that's providing some energy. They dropped two straight on the road, but it was like against Troy and against South Alabama, which South Alabama isn't that good this year, but Troy certainly is. And it's been nice to have a women's team to root for, a women's team to finally go, okay, this is a team that you can get behind. But yeah, when you don't have a women's team to get behind, it's tough to make it to the stadium and watch those games.
So while we're talking basketball, the news finally broke that we knew was coming down all along. UTA Little Rock leaving the Sun Belt, UTA going to the WAC, Little Rock, I believe they were going to the Valley. Is that correct?
Ohio Valley, yes.
What are your thoughts there on that news finally becoming official?
My first thought is that I'm going to miss those guys. Yeah, you know, I'm going to miss the Mavericks. I'm going to miss the Trojans. It does feel like, though, it's a new era in the Sun Belt with full programs being indoctrinated into the Sun Belt. And there just wasn't any room. In fact, I put out a tweet about how UT Arlington and UL and University of Little Rock, University of Arkansas at Little Rock, were sort of gently nudged out of the Sun Belt. And I got a couple of responses saying, no, we weren't gently nudged. It was pretty much a big Dear John letter given to us. So So, yes, yeah, so I'm going to miss these guys, but it was also sort of a weird pairing for us. And I think the WAC and the Ohio Valley got really good basketball teams, and I think they'll do pretty well.
Yeah, I agree with Jeremy's overall sentiment, and I will a little plug here. So October the 19th posted something about why Georgia State was staying in the Sun Belt for a variety of reasons, their leadership and their decisions. And did drop the nuggets in there to say, hey, yes, UTA and Little Rock are headed out and are looking elsewhere. Wasn't breaking news necessarily. I believe Little Rock and Texas Arlington had both announced that they were going to hire an outside firm to take a look at where they were going for conference purposes. You don't do that if you're going to stay. And ultimately, that's what they were looking to do, that they weren't certainly gently nudged, as you mentioned. They were shoved out. They were saying, hey, you need to go find a home, and it's probably a good idea for you to do it. We certainly saw that a couple of years ago with Idaho, Mexico State. They had signed that contract, as former Commissioner Benson let us know. You know, hey, their contract was up. They were going to move on. You had UTA and Little Rock were both, in the league, getting their share of Sun Belt winnings, basically. They're getting their share for football and basketball. And, this was a decision. They want to obviously solidify the all sports. But I agree with you. I mean, UTA was always one of the better arenas at not having football. We knew where their bread was buttered, basically, there with basketball. And Little Rock has been in the league and obviously been very dominant in the Sun Belt if you go back 25, 30, 40 years ago.
Yeah, I actually had a brief conversation with the chancellor at UA Little Rock, and I kind of thought that she would put a sort of positive spin on going to the Ohio Valley, but I got the impression just from talking to her that they weren't very happy about their unceremonious departure from the Sun Belt. She made a point to say, oh yeah, we're original member, been here 30 years. And it was a bit of an inglorious end for both of these programs. And I wish there was a more dignified way for those two programs to leave. But in the end, I think it's going to be the best for everybody involved.
We're pleased to be to have a distinguished guest with us, the athletic director of Georgia Southern University, Jared Binko, joining the Fun Belt podcast for the first time. Thanks for jumping on board from spacious somewhere around Statesboro, I would assume, right? How are we doing this evening?
Good, Ben. I appreciate it. I'd use the word distinguished loosely, so I appreciate it. So.
We were talking a little off air, just kind of about your background specifically, kind of the internal, external as well. And I was fascinated by that. I'm always interested how folks become athletic directors, how folks get that road. You have many, many people that want to be at the top of the food chain, if you will. I've talked to Charlie Cobb about it. He says he's kind of more of a glorified HR director. In some facets of his job, just kind of managing people and managing staffs and things like that. What was kind of your path? You mentioned off the air about your time in Athens, and certainly that was interesting knowing those folks.
No, I got a lot of respect for Charlie. He always is a straight shooter, so I always appreciate. There's a lot of personnel pieces, obviously a huge part of our jobs. But no, I started in Athens in communications and wanted to get in the business side and came up in the business route at four different SEC schools, UGA, Arkansas, Auburn, Mississippi State. And I've had an opportunity to come back to Georgia Southern. I always tell people, there was a one pathway. Someone write a book about it, probably sell a lot of copies. Because when you meet with a lot of student athletes or students, as a matter of fact, at Georgia Southern, that want to be ADs, there's really not a wrong and a right way to do it per se. I mean, really, there's a lot of different channels and a lot of different lanes. And I always tell people it's kind of like being on 85 in Atlanta, and there's 7-8 lanes at some point, and they all converged at some point in one or two lanes. And so you've got to be looked at as one of the best in your respected fields to be given consideration. And someone told me that early, and it kind of made it really clear to me that I need to focus on, one, where I'm at, where my feet are, but two, be considered one of the best finance people or business people in the country. And only by doing that would I have a chance to be an AD. So I think that's really important.
Jared, I don't want to dance around the topic. I just need to know right now, how did you land Clay Helton? How did that happen? What was the process?
No, it's interesting. And that's a great question, Jeremy. I get that a lot. One, we're very, very fortunate, obviously, to have Clay here. One, I mean, he's already been exceeding my expectations. You know, when we made the change, and I think I mentioned this on different interviews, we kind of knew this was the direction we're going. Obviously going into the year, we knew it was going to, we had some opportunities to really be successful, but also some potential challenges and bumps in the road. Obviously made the decision, and anytime you make a decision, Jeremy, and I'm sure y'all can also appreciate, you don't go into it blindly. And so you're always keeping tabs, particularly in football. You've got to keep abreast. I enjoy meeting new people, but you've got to always, I don't believe so much in a short list per se. I just try to meet as many people and form genuine relationships as possible. And then ultimately see where the ducks fall, because what is interesting, people say, well, why don't you have a short list? Well, there's always people you follow, but I mean, one coaching cycle just this year can tell you that half your list could be gone. So you're always in essence trying to say, who's the next coach that if one day an opportunity came about, I would at least like to have a conversation with. And so, you know, obviously USC moved on Clay before our job came open. And, you know, my thought is I'd love to talk to Clay, talk to a lot of people. I ended up talking to 17 plus guys, and not just a conversation for over an hour each. And when I talked to Clay early on, I didn't know if he had a legitimate interest or not. But we connected, at least I think we connected in that first call. And then, you know, getting out early, Jeremy helped. In many ways, these searches are really interesting, could go five different directions or 500 different directions, depending on how you look at it, based on leveraging and obviously supply and demand. And so when this opportunity with Clay came up, we had a great conversation, circled back around to him. And I just didn't see the need to wait. I thought he was a great fit for us. And so it just happened to be he could start early too. And I would tell you that extra 5 or so weeks really allowed us to, one, solidify the roster. We haven't had hardly anybody in the portal. We had a lot of guys come back. And three, I think you see a really strong 20-person class there in December. And so I couldn't have drawn it up. I mean, I think that that's the beauty and at times the irony of coaching searches is they're all different. And so this search was great. I think to answer your question directly, though, I think it was aligned values. I think alignment at the present on down was important. And I think just like Clay, I think myself as well, I've always had kind of a chip on my shoulder about trying to show people that, one, you can only do the job but be good at the job. And I think Clay's got a healthy chip on his shoulder to show that he's an elite coach and have all the expectations that he will.
So that my follow-up question to that is, does this mean that the triple option is dead in Statesboro or is it alive and well? We need to know.
You know, I'll tell you, Clay's offense, we talked and, you know, it's interesting. People, sometimes when you talk to them and coaches, they can talk in bumper sticker. And Clay wasn't that. I mean, his deal was, hey, listen, ideally, right, and that'd be the operative word, ideally we're a 60% run, 40 pass. And we went through the process, and I'll tell you, one of the things that we looked at a little film where we talked is really that Ole Miss-type style of offense where you got power runs, power reads, you can get the ball in playmakers' hands, but you're stretching it vertically. And so to answer your question, you know, we really haven't, if you want to not be technical on you, Jeremy, but we haven't really run the triple since Jeff was here, Coach Munkin was here. And so, you know, it's been some sort of a gun option the last three coaches. And so for us, you know, we won't be running, you know, obviously the triple option per se. But I think what you have to also realize is there's so much is based out of an option. What is an RPO? I mean, there's all types of plays and stuff that come out of options. So our primary offense will be a pro style. But I'm sure we'll have iterations and mixtures of various offenses in that.
Especially as the offense evolves. I know that's the one always thing that is known nationally for, you know, what Georgia Southern had success, obviously, at the FCS level and moved it forward. But I just laugh because you're exactly right. That's what an RPO is. And when you see guys in motion, well, that's the third option up there. Yeah. So you have multiple teams running triple option. They just are not standing behind, you know, like a Jeff Munkin or you know, watching Army and Navy go at it per se. Well, you mentioned the portal. I wanted to ask your thoughts on that specifically. It is obviously revolutionized, I think, football, and we've even seen it obviously in basketball. What's kind of your take as it stands today, where it's going potentially from an AD seat? And, you know, I know just educating folks, whether it's student athletes or coaches, you know, things that you see or you hear, or hey, if you were in charge, if you had a say, what to do with the transfer portal, what would you do, or what can you see it moving forward in 2022 and 2023?
No, that's a good question, man. I'm not one of those doom and gloom guys. I mean, I think there are good things about the portal. I'll start there because it's a more efficient mechanism or pathway for student athletes for whatever reason. to look at other institutions of higher education. Now, I think that's in some ways it's a more transparent, more open book. I think it allows student athletes, anything that helps student athletes, I'm generally going to be for. I think it allows them a really good conduit to make a potential change. Now, the flip side of that, unfortunately, I saw some stats last week, well over 1,000. I think it was like 1,100 plus football student athletes are in the portal. 400 plus have found homes below, I think it's like 46-47%. Don't hold me to those numbers. And then, you know, obviously majority have not found homes. So my biggest concern with a portal are the same deal. And you could say it's similar, but different. It's kind of like when some people declare early for the draft and they don't get drafted. So they don't find a home in this sense, the NFL, right? It's kind of the same thing. My concerns are 5 or 10 years down the road. You know, there's going to be a lot of people that unfortunately went in the portal and didn't find a home or, you know, had some major delays to get there. So, there's good and bad with it. I always say that portal taketh and giveth, which is true, right? I mean, so I would tell you, where's it going? I've always said from day one, there's a linkage or a commonality. If we look at name, image, likeness, which could be a show in itself, the topic's always name, image, likeness. It's been talked about for majority of people separate of the transfer portal, right? And I think if, as we look at the evolution, as we continue to see the, obviously, the adoption of the new constitution by NCAA and others, I think we have to look at these issues. They're all interlinked, right? They're all interwoven. And that's where I think we're going relative to the NIL and the transfer portal. And I think more and more, those are going to be linked closer together, not two one-off processes.
The portal carousel, I guess you could call it, has really created a lot of issues, though, where some teams are borderline not able to fill the full 85-man roster. And then with the 32 that you can sign, you're still not going to be close. You might be able to hit the mid 70 mark. What is the fix for that?
Well, I'll tell you, I don't know if I have the best answer, quite honestly, Dusty, right now. I think the roster management piece is so important. And, you know, we've talked to our coaches. You got to look at it a couple of different ways. One, you know, you still have that window that has a finite ending of the COVID year, right? So you got a roster management based off those additional counters, right? But when those expire, then you're back to obviously a smaller window. Because in theory, you know, for when they decided, the NCAA decided that you had a five-year window, I should say, where you had five classes really for 4 years worth of scholarships. And so that gives you a little, potentially one could argue a little bit more cushion and padding per se. But I'll tell you, it comes down to roster management. I mean, that's where, you know, Dusty, just to be frank with you, I think to your point, you know, I think it all comes back, quite frankly, to relationships. And I think that's so important. I think you, in today's, and I think it's always been important, but even more so today, having genuine relationships with student athletes, that you care for them, not only on the field or the court, but off the field or off the court, because those relationships can often not only solidify consistency on the roster, but also potentially keep someone that's looking to transfer. And it's always about what's best for the student athlete. And so I do think the roster management piece, I don't have the perfect answer right now. I do think, though, that, you know, one, you have to prepare for all types of, you know, situations. I think most people would tell you, hey, you can't have enough healthy quarterbacks or enough healthy offensive linemen or defense, whatever the case. And that's one way to do it, is just continue to stock your, you know, your walk-on program. And there's ways to potentially make sure that you're in the portal and you're filling holes as needed. I still come back to the best answer is going to be genuine relationships, because I just think it's harder as a you know, former student, obviously, like all of us were. It's hard as a student when people you know, invest in you and are a mentor for you to leave that university. You're going to make sure you probably have either a better opportunity, or maybe there's an educational pursuit that school can't offer you. But I think that's where I would just share with you right now. And then where it goes in the future, I'm not real sure. I mean, I think it could go six different ways from Sunday, to be honest with you. So,
well, switching gears a little bit, I want to talk a little bit about what your thoughts are of this exciting offseason that we had with expansion. Actually, it was an offseason right in the middle of the football season. It just seemed to add an extra layer of drama throughout the whole season. What do you think about the new additions, especially considering they're going to have such an impact on the Sun Belt, on the Sun Belt East?
Yeah, no, I think it's exciting. Obviously, our expansion work group did a fantastic job just running. Obviously, Commissioner Gill ran point on that, and And again, there's a component or a composite of current, obviously, ADs and also presidents or slash chancellors in this conference. Did a great job of one, gauging interest, but two, pulling the trigger when needed. So I think it's great. The thing that's so impressive in the Sun Belt and having been, as I was sharing with y'all earlier, just the four different SEC schools and growing up in the Southeast, the geographic footprint to me, I think in itself is a unique, well, attribute. There's a lot of things, but you could point that to the Sun Belt of being a pretty cool deal relative to getting back to more regional rivalries. So I think that's something that allows itself or lends itself. I've said all before, I mean, I still think, and I've said the day I got here, we're the best group of five football conference. And, you know, when you start looking at these four new additions that are coming in, they only make it better. Right. And so, you know, you look at the viewership numbers on ESPN. I mean, the Sun Belt prominence, not only in baseball, but obviously basketball, baseball and others continues to increase. So I think the four schools make us better. You know, you can look at each of the schools. I mean, you've got some great basketball schools as well coming in, baseball and a lot of your Olympic sports. So overall, I think it, and they also fit that academic profile. So I think it's a good thing. Obviously, we're meeting in Atlanta tomorrow to start talking about when that transition is going to be and all the derivatives from that. But overall, I think it's really good. And one last thing, too, I was sharing with people here recently that, you know, during the COVID year, last year, of course, it's coming back a little bit, but last year in particular, that first year, we learned a lot about increased efficiencies and things that allowed us to, like a lot of schools, I think outside the box. And one of the things I think is a benefit is, and I'll give you one random example, is when you travel, let's just use a softball or a baseball team or anybody that has over 30 plus student athletes. When you go through an airport, you find a commercial airport, it is a huge process for baggage and getting people on flights on time. And if they're not on time and rebooking them on, I mean, it's not a fun process. It's not like, and even as you can imagine, I have two young kids. I love traveling with my wife, but sometimes my boys, it's not easy traveling with an 8 and 6 year old, right? Well, that's just with four people. And so you imagine 30 people, all the things that come up. And so what we found was during the COVID year last year that we can actually provide a really good student athlete experience and not have those lengthy travels. And they can hop on a bus and have Wi-Fi and complete homework assignments. And I just think that there's some things that from that allow us with this new expansion to hopefully, you know, create a smaller footprint for our student athletes, which I think equates to a better experience.
So the rumor mill is that while y'all are in Atlanta, it'll become official that they'll be in beginning July 1st, 2022.
Ooh.
With that said, how do you make those scheduling adjustments? Because your football schedule's pretty much set already for next year.
Yeah, so I mean, but here's what I would say. So you look at us, like, for example, I mean, I always look at it from a home game standpoint, but obviously we have, you know, 12 games. We've always, you know, had an FCS, two G5 games and a Power 5 bye game, right? So that leaves you with the eight conference games. And so obviously four at home and four on the road. And so this year will probably be different from some schools, depending upon how quick the conference turns around those conference schedules. Ideally, it'd be great to market, obviously, a season ticket plan for any of the schools in the Sun Belt with those new schools factored in. And if you look at it with the East, we'll have a predominantly, you know, the newest, a majority of the newest schools just because of the geographic location. So it'll be interesting to see when we get that final schedule. That for us, like, Dusty, that's not going to really be so much on my end because I'm not having to change any of my games per se, at least at this point. It's just going to be, you know, where does the schedule work out with a – because the way, if you think about from a divisional standpoint, you know, 14 teams, you'll have six in your division, right, not counting yourself, and two other schools in this case, the Western Division. Now, you know, when you're in the SEC, as an example, I can only speak to that, you always have one permanent crossover, right? And then you'd have one rotating. From my understanding, as of a last meeting, those two crossover games are always going to be rolling through. There's no consistency. So I think the piece that you have to figure out is ultimately, all right, so we've got the six home games, and obviously four of those will be conference institutions. But also, where are we going on the road for the other four games? And that's where, you know, obviously – I think it's important to keep the rivalries where they are, preferably not have to return back to a rival for 2 years in a row to work that out. But it'll be interesting. I mean, I'm excited. I mean, I've shared with our coaches that we have to plan across all sports for the rest of the institutions that are coming into the Sun Belt particularly on the Eastern Division side, that we need to be prepared to play them next year until we're notified otherwise. So fully preparing for that transition, and we'll find out more tomorrow. But I just think for out of due diligence, we need to plan on all those schools being in the conference. So
I have a question to you regarding beautiful Eagle Creek.
Yeah.
Have you been baptized in beautiful yeah. Eagle Creek? And is it true that it contains magical properties?
Well, so I'll answer your first question. Yes, was baptized last year, and being a Baptist went full immersion. Didn't do the sprinkle grew up in a Methodist church, but a Baptist now. So I did full immersion along with our basketball coach, Brian Berg. As far as magical properties, I definitely think it does. I can speak to, I did not get COVID last year. So maybe that factored in or not, not as a bad joke, but no, I does it have magical properties? Sure. I mean, I think it's obviously Coach Russell made it one of our many traditions that he created down here. And it has obviously special reference and it's revered down here. But yeah, I mean, it's special. In fact, I was telling Clay this week that we need to get him baptized, but I think he wants to wait till the waters warm up and they're flowing a little better. So
see, now didn't Clay tell us that he actually already did that? Was he fibbing with us, or am I just inventing that? Clay
was. I thought it was on his to do.
It was on his checklist. Yeah, it wasn't done yet, but he had a plan for it.
He did tell me the other day they were out there. He said the waters were flowing pretty good. It would have been a good day. Of course, it was like, high 30s that day. So I don't want our new coach to have hypothermia. So
what is your favorite tradition that the Eagles have?
Yeah, that's a great question. Eagle Creek is pretty special just because I drive past it every morning on the way into the office. Obviously, when you start looking at, Coach Russell's influence, and I'll tell you, I mean, I think part of the traditions too, or like we had a opportunity back in the fall to bring the Dirty Dozen, the original, really, I didn't say founders, but the individuals that really philanthropically donations of time wise really help form the program. Obviously, the thing about Freedom's Flight, that's a really cool tradition. I just think there's so many traditions down here. It's kind of like saying like, who's your favorite child, right? I mean, I think that's it's a hard question. I think Beautiful Eagle Creek's right up there with me just because of growing up hearing stories about it. And obviously I drive past it every morning. And every time I drive past there, I think of Coach Russell and just the traditions here. And that's one of the things. And I share this with somebody, if someone growing up in the state, Coach Russell obviously, and I'll say that's another story of another day of how he needs to be in the College Football Hall of Fame. And that's something that I feel very strong about, as do our fans. But as impressive of a coach as he was, you got to think about it. I mean, he was an incredible marketer. I don't think he gets the credit for that. And also everybody that helped get this thing going. So a lot of traditions in a short period of time, for sure.
I appreciate you jumping on, man. That was awesome. And yeah, no worries. Definitely we'll have to follow up and see how the meetings go starting tomorrow.
Yeah, no, it's we'll get a lot. I'm optimistic. I know some people would like to have information earlier. We all would. I mean, that's part of it. But I left our last meeting and I feel like in a good spot, just anticipating the change was coming sooner than later. But I'll tell you guys, like, I'm sure like each of y'all can understand, like, we have so much on each of our campuses to worry about. A lot of this stuff is not in my hands. And I try to focus on the controllables sometimes as much as the non-controllables. So, our focus is a lot of people have this off season getting it better. Good deal, guys. Listen, hey, I appreciate y'all's time. I'm glad to always hop on. I appreciate what y'all do for the Sun Belt. We, we all think we should get more and more coverage, but I appreciate what you do because it does bring additional attention to the league, and I think our profile is only going to get better. So
we do.
Yeah, I mean, we're all lovers of the Sun Belt. I mean, obviously, yeah, we love our individual schools, but the good of the belt is the good for all of us.
100%.
We heard from Georgia Southern Athletic Director Jared Binko, kind of the current state. To get to that point, though, we had to go through the building process of the Sun Belt Conference. So we've been reaching out, talking to Sun Belt Conference legends, and joining us is the legend of the Sun Belt, the 2005 Freshman of the Year, 2008 Player of the Year, over 4,000 yards. He was so good, they retired his number before he even left the school. And that is, of course, running back Terrell Finroy from Louisiana Lafayette. Welcome in, Terrell.
Thank you. Thank y'all for having me on.
Guys, let me tell you, he sounds humble already. When I met him at the Sunbelt Conference Championship game, he's got a t-shirt on with his 32. And then when he walks past you, the back is just full of all of his credentials. And I'm like, that dude is so badass. He can get away with doing that. And it was the best thing ever.
It's I try to stay humble and let the action speak for itself, but it kind of feels a little bit good just to boast that, you know, every once in a while.
So Tyrell, you came into the Sun Belt, I guess it was 2005 when you won the Sun Belt Freshman Player of the Year award, and kind of started. I don't know if you started it, but you became part of that sort of Cajun running back machinery that seems to turn out great running back after great running back after great running back. In your 4 years with the Cajuns, what games do you remember being the most impactful?
Just like you said, started off was in 2005. I was just a freshman coming in. And I remember the first game we went down there to play Texas when they won the national championship out there, and one of the running backs ended up going down to get hurt. And Coach Brian Jenkins come on the sideline and he's like, "Hey, you going in?" And I was like, "What? I'm going in." You know, and everything was moving so fast. So I'm like, "Okay, let's do this." So I went in and got rocked pretty hard a couple of plays, but ever since then, it was just like that was the big game that I can remember the most was going in my freshman year playing against Texas, seeing those bigger guys, the game moving at a more of a faster pace than in high school. So it was pretty exciting to start off being in a bigger stadium that I played in, first off coming from out of high school. So it was pretty exciting, man.
So you mentioned that coming out of high school, you're from La Place, not too far there from Lafayette, but really it was only the Cajuns and Ole Miss that made offers. Even though you had over 5,700 yards in high school, how were you missed? I mean, you're a big guy. There's no way people just missed you.
Yeah, well, it kind of flew under the radar. Like I said, one of the other biggest schools was Ole Miss. And kind of, I guess it worked in my favor coming out here, staying home and being able to, my family coming in to be able to watch me, you know, in Lafayette. But it was the coaching change that I don't think a lot of people ever like really knew. It was really the coaching change that kind of made things divert to a different area and coming to Lafayette whenever Coach Cutliffe got fired there and Coach Edron came on. They just didn't show any interest. And I can remember Coach Rebo, who's coaching now at Nicholls State, came sat in my kitchen, and that's when I made a verbal commit. It's like, "Hey, I'm ready. I want to play. I don't want to sit. I don't want to redshirt. I don't want to sit down. I want to see what I can do to bring to the table to take the program to the next level." And looking at the school and looking at the running backs that was there and seeing that it was the leading rusher at the time was Jerry Babb, which was a quarterback. And I was like, I want to challenge that. I want to see if I can make a difference to be a running back and have a running back have the, you know, the leading rushing yards and not a quarterback.
I remember at that Sunbelt Conference Championship game also, the Cajuns won the title. There's Michael DeJorma that happened to be running past us. He was just the OC at the time and not head coach. And I looked at you and I said, how is it seeing that you were part of the rock, part of the foundation that got the program to this point? Just talk about that and kind of what went through your mind as you saw all that hard work that you had lead to a conference championship finally.
Oh, it's amazing. Just going back to the Cajuns being able to reach the New Orleans Bowl years back, just to see the program take the next step and just to be on the battlefield with Mike and the other guys and Lamar, who's currently back now, just being able to play with those guys and set that foundation to see that, you know, that kind of started the transition of a winning program. And just to look back and say, "Hey, we was a part of that you know, that startup and to see what a program was back then to where the program is now. I love it. And it feels even better now because now Mike is in the head spot. So I can't, you know, I don't know the words to say. It's amazing just to see Mike in that head spot, that he's the person who led that and started that foundation. And now he's in charge to program to even a bigger level than what it was in the past.
Tyrell, we spoke to Jay Walker earlier in the year about the Cajuns and where the program was going, where it was headed. And we asked him who was the Cajuns' biggest rival. And he listed, like, it seemed like the entirety of the college universe. He said everybody wants a piece of the Cajuns. At your time with the Cajuns, who were your biggest rivals?
It's Monroe. It still is. That's my Super Bowl. That's the game every year. And even last year and the years to come, that will be my game that we have to beat Monroe. I don't care who else we play on our schedule. It's Monroe.
And I'm still having PTSD of his game where he averaged, I don't know, like 400 yards a touch back in 2008. I forget what his legit numbers were. It was 20 carries for 297.
Damn! Yeah.
Including an 89-yarder.
Yeah. Why does Tyrell hate you so much?
and I take it personal. Like, I think it was me because I happened to be in the end zone for one of his touchdowns. And I was just like, bruh, come on.
Yeah, it was some good time.
So are you still connected with the program? Do you still hang out with kids?
I try to go around as much as possible as I can just to stay in the loop. And I tell, no matter if it's Coach Winger, I told Mike, I said, just reach out. Any input I can and try to put in or anything I can try to do to help the program, I'm all for it. No matter what it is, even if it's on the law enforcement side where I'm at now currently, I try to help out as much as possible and try to be visible around there to try to help the guys to I guess talk to, or if they need to talk to somebody who's not as connected as I was back then, but just to, hey, I'm a phone call away. I give them my phone call to reach out for. They give me a call whenever it's needed to just to reach out, no matter what it may be, because I was at one point in your shoes and I know what it's like and I know what the pressure is like. And the pressure is a little bit bigger now because we're on that national level now, and we have a lot of recognition and a lot of scouts and a lot of eyes on the Cajuns now. So just try to relieve any pressure, I'm there.
So you mentioned that you had mentioned, and we'll bring this up, that you're now a member of Lafayette. Do you ever have to use that running back speed?
Oh yeah, it's I currently do warrant, so I'm always running and gunning and chasing. It kind of it reminds me of being on a playing field, but now I'm on the defensive side, so now I'm chasing the guy that's running away from me. So it's still fun.
So with that said, though, Tyrell, you know, you had all these 1,000-yard rushing every year you were there, only two career tackles. Did that prepare you for this police career?
Being on defense, being on offense and having to, no matter if the ball was intercepted or a fumble and having to transition. So now I get to, I envision in my head the guy that I'm chasing, he has the ball, so go get him.
Oh, that's awesome. So when the career ended, and what was the process after your career with the Cajuns? I know you spent a little time working with the NFL, but when was it that you realized, okay, maybe it was time to try something else?
It was the right after I finished and went through the whole draft process, the pro day and draft, and I had to make a business decision as far as where I was going to go and what I was going to do, and had an opportunity to go out and work for New Orleans Saints. And it was the New Orleans Saints and it was the Bears. So it was, I can go and walk on with the New Orleans Saints and potentially maybe sign a contract, or I had a contract with the Bears. So I made a decision to go and fly up to Chicago, sign with them, and went through the whole the preseason practices and getting banged up by Urlacher in practice. Wasn't too fond of the snow out there, being out here in the South. And it was different. All those guys was out there practicing in shorts, and I'm out here with long sleeves and a jacket and long pants and practicing. So I didn't like that too much. But it was just like, I made the decision. It was like, when and how long and how far will I go? And it wasn't a long-term contract. So I didn't want to move around and move state to state and live that bouncing around type lifestyle. So I made a call to my agent, and I was like, I don't know if my goal in my head was to make it there. It was never to, and I always reflect back on it. It wasn't to, I guess, go further. I wanted to make it there. And I sat in the lobby at the Chicago Bears facility. You know, it was like, I don't know. I think I had enough of playing football. I said, I've been playing football since I was 7 years old, and body got beat up pretty, pretty bad. So I was like, I don't know if I think I'm ready to just be a normal person and get out of the spotlight. So I didn't want to be in the spotlight anymore. I just wanted to live a normal life, being a normal guy, going to work. You know, a lot of people don't say that now, but I just wanted to just be a normal guy. So I left there, and I kind of, as everybody does, it reflects them back on them when they play ball, I guess. I was like, oh, I don't know if I'm ready to be done with it. So I came back to Lafayette, and I was like, well, I miss football. I want to play. I want to continue to play. So that's when I went to Las Vegas and the UFL League that just started up.
Uh-huh.
So I got out there to Las Vegas, and I was like, man, playing football and being in Vegas is not a good mix. It was partying, and that city doesn't shut down. And I've, you know, being from La Paz, it's like, it was, New Orleans was right there. You know, New Orleans is a party, you know, area, sure, but Vegas doesn't shut down. And I was like, no, I can't. And we was practicing at UNLV Stadium. I was like, no, I called my agent. I said, look, man, I said, I'm done. I said, I'm going back to Lafayette. I said, I'm probably going to regret it, and it's going to cycle in my head that I want to continue to play football. But I said, I'm going to make a business decision for myself. I said, I want to be a normal person and use my talent to help others go forward in their career with football.
Was coaching ever in the cards for you, or did you feel that you were only going to be a player?
At that point in time, it was just being a player. Now, as I'm back in the area, and now I have 3 boys, so now it's coaching. So I want to just help them out. My boys, and see the direction they want to take, no matter what sport. It's crazy because now I'm currently coaching their little league soccer. I never imagined myself coaching soccer, but every sport they played is for soccer, baseball, football. I'm coaching them, and I briefly coached. I think it's 3 years I coached at St. Leo, and that was amazing. That was fun. I love coaching. That it was 5th and 6th and 7th and 8th grade. So I think, as my kids grow older, I think me transitioning to a coaching role somewhere, I think that and maybe transition possibly out of law enforcement and using what I have to help somebody else, I think it may be in the future down the road.
Tyrell, you entered the Sun Belt at some very formative times of the conference when it was a fair, it was pretty much a brand new conference. When you exit your career, it was beginning to build up steam. But now the Sun Belt is rocking and rolling. It's expanded. It's got some marquee teams. How different was the Sun Belt? Was the Sun Belt then as it is compared today?
I think the conference was a tough conference back then, but we just didn't get the recognition that it deserved. And you had teams like Florida Atlantic, Southern Miss, Florida International that left the conference to go to a different conference, but the Cajuns stuck with it. And I'm grateful that they stuck with it, because now it's one of the, you know, a talks about conference. It was tough back then. Like, you had Troy, who was going against SEC schools who had beat LSU during the tenure that whenever we was playing. So I think the conference always has been tough. You just got overlooked.
Terrell, biggest memory of your playing days?
There's so many. Being at Cajun Field, and I we played at some great stadiums like Texas and Kansas State and LSU, but it's nothing like walking the Cajun Walk and seeing the Cajun culture that's always been around. You seeing people on the Cajun Walk that's smiling and laughing and having a good time, eating and cooking and listening to music, and just being at Cajun Field, walking down that tunnel. And I tell every guy that's currently there, or if I come across a high school kid that may be thinking about where they want to reach their play their college career, it's not all about how big the school is or how big the stadium is. Look at the culture and look at the people behind the program. And to me, that was my commitment to coming to and playing out here in Lafayette. It was just the culture. It's unreal. And like I said, walking down that tunnel and going on that field, that's my it.
Tyrell, you are truly a legend of the Sun Belt, one of those guys that has really elevated the Sun Belt from fledgling football program to a full-fledged conference, and we thank you for being on the show.
Yes, sir. I thank y'all for having me and having some great talk and bringing back some great memories.
So, Jeremy, another Sun Belt legend there as we talk to Louisiana Lafayette running back Tyrell Finroy. Always great to hear the stories that made the Sun Belt the top G5 pro conference in the NCAA.
And what a great guy. You know, he had his shot with the NFL, had a shot with the USFL, and said, hey, I want to go back to my hometown. And now he's serving the public as a police officer. I think that's just great.
It is great, and also scary that, you know, crime is not going to pay because he will catch you.
I love how he said that he thought of criminals as football players with the football, and he was out to get them. So, hey, if you're going to commit a crime in Lafayette, you should probably think twice, because Tyrell will be after you.
True story. Plugs, promos, parting shots. What you got, Jeremy?
Howlraiser has a new story up about Mike Bellotto and his recent success with the Red Wolves basketball. It's time that we gave him credit where credit is due. There's still a lot of fans that are a little grousy about Mike Bellotto, and he could be he's got rough edges, and some of those rough edges have sort of rubbed on some of the fans, but I think we're finally seeing the program come together, and it's really important that we give him his due. So check it out on howlraiser.com.
I'm good, actually. I got nothing to plug. I got nothing problems. Nothing. Just be sure to follow us on Twitter at FunBeltPC, yes. Warhawk _ report on Twitter, and always dropping tidbits throughout the week as we get ready for another show next week.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.